You're listening to a podcast from leadculture.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 40 of Lead Culture. And for the final time, we'll be taking a look at the wider and international game that is Rugby League. And we'd like to thank Everything Rugby League and League Freak for helping to share the show over the years. And I'd also like to give a personal thanks to Des and Declan Foy, who have had a chance to work with over the years on this show, which has been an absolute pleasure to work with both those guys. And all the times we've had a chance to go to different countries and run up different Rugby League festivals and the Eurotag stuff we've done and all the other activities, it's been absolutely fantastic working with you guys. And we'll start with some scores, some important scores from the last month. And we've got in the USARL, Atlanta Rhinos becoming the USARL Grand Finalists, the champions, defeating New York Knights 32 points to 18. And the Griffin Cup over there in Western Europe was won by the Netherlands, defeating Germany 30 points to 18. So well done there to Kane, the coach at the Netherlands there. And in Jamaica, we saw a historic victory with them defeating Canada 28 points to 14. And we've got some good interviews. We're going to start the show with our first mini interview. We've got Eden Clayton from We Are 13, who's going to be talking about some fantastic Vanuatu shirts that We Are 13 will be selling in the next few months. And then we'll move on to our main interview with Robert Bergin of Latin Heat, who'll be talking all about the Sudamericano, which is the Latin American Championships that's going to be taking place in November. And one thing I'll be asking for, if you can help donate a little bit of money towards that, that'd be good. Help Robert out. He's done a lot of hard work in raising funds. And if you can give him a few quid or dollars here and there, I'm sure he'd be very appreciative of that. And we'll end the show on a great interview that we got coming from Istanbul, from Gural Yildiz, who'll be talking all about what's going on in Turkey and the fantastic achievement that they've had of becoming observer status members of the RLEF. And we're going to start the show now with Eden. Okay, so I've got Eden Clayton on the line now. And Eden, you're still involved with We Are 13, We Are XIII, and you've got a new range of shirts available.
Yeah, so we're working with the Vanuatu Rugby League at the minute. We wanted to try something a bit different and help them promote the sport in the country. So they're taking on the Solomon Islands later this year, which is now really an annual test for them. And they've got their own domestic league up and running now. So we've got a range of the Vanuatu international jerseys currently available. So yeah, I think we're definitely the only people in the UK that are selling them at the minute. But we're trying to give them some exposure. Obviously, it helps us support them if we can buy shirts off them and promote the growth of the game in the country.
I can imagine being one of the Pacific Islands, they're quite a distinctive design.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's black and gold and red and colourful with Polynesian artwork on there as well, so it's definitely a bit different.
Right. So if you were to get one of those, it'd probably be an early shop for Christmas, perhaps?
Yeah, definitely. It'd be something a bit different as well.
What other shirts have you got? Have you got any shirts left over from any of the other nations?
Yeah, so from our previous stock, we've still got some Tongan shirts and one or two Samoan shirts left over. And we've still got some items left. We're working with the Swedish Rugby League and with the Spanish Rugby League as well. It's a little bit of a range.
Well, they sound certainly something that people should perhaps have a look at getting, especially you've got the Samoan and the Tongan shirts. That sounds just in time for the World Cup coming up.
Yeah, and we've got them on sale as well, so we've got them at a reduced price at the minute.
That sounds good. And I can imagine the Spanish shirts and the Swedish shirts would look fairly distinctive, a bit of a conversation piece, I can imagine.
Yeah, they are. I have to admit, they're definitely tight-fitting. But the Spanish shirt We bought this as the Spanish Rugby League were gearing up to be in a World Cup qualifiers, where they progressed quite far. And we have a few of the Swedish club jerseys as well. So if anyone needs it, comes back and Stockholm. So yeah, so it's definitely something alternative.
What sizes have you got for the Spanish shirt, so you're not sure?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but it's mainly medium and large. Yeah, no, yeah, I like the Vanuatu shirts, so I'm going to keep hold of one of them for myself. That's my favourite, isn't it?
And this, I know there's plenty of shirt collectors out there, and there's plenty of sort of rare shirt collectors, so there must be a few bargains there people can pick up. Right, okay, well, thank you very much. And what are you up to yourself now? Because I know you've come back from Africa. You've been doing a spell in Africa, and where do we find you these days?
Well, at the minute in Lancashire. I came back from Rwanda a couple of months ago. So I was working there as a researcher, and then also played rugby union while I was out there. I nearly ended up as the national team head coach at one point.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Federation president gave the job to his housemate. Otherwise, I'd have been one of the youngest international coaches in the world, which would have been nice. But I still coach. I coached one of the Premiership teams. I say Premiership, there's only one division, Garly Sharks. And we had only, usually at any one point in time, only two Caucasian players in the country. So that definitely made it interesting, particularly when we went out to play in the villages. And we found goats on the pitch and stuff like that. So it was definitely a bit different to playing in England.
That's brilliant.
I'm also going out to Toronto this weekend. I'm going to go and watch the Wolfpack game. And staying out there for a few weeks as well. So.
Oh, have fun with that. And you'll have to let us know how you get on with that.
Yeah, I will.
Right. Eden Clayton, thank you very much. And that was a great little interview there with Eden Clayton. The next interview is now with Robert Bergen. Right, I'll get started. So I've got Robert Bergen on the other end of the line. We're privileged to have Robert. Robert is a journalist who likes to speak his mind, and he's an innovator of the game, pushing forward the boundaries with such things as Latin Heat Rugby League. And Latin Heat Rugby League and Latin American Rugby League is what Robert's going to talk to us about.
Thanks for having me, Stuart.
Very exciting news. We've got a exciting competition taking place in November.
Yeah, so for the first time, we've got a Latin American Championships in 13-a-side rugby league. Last year, we had a 9-a-side tournament that took place in Argentina that was contested by five teams, but only two of those, Chile and Argentina, were national teams, and the rest were provincial sides from within Argentina, and a composite side that was made up of different Latino nations. But what we've got happening in November of this year will be the genuine national teams coming from Argentina, Chile, plus Colombia and Mexico. We do have sort of fringe hopes that Peru and Brazil will take part, but I think more likely than not they'll be a part of a similar thing next year. They're probably not quite at that stage yet. So the exciting thing for anyone out there who's a rugby league expansionist is of the four teams that are set to compete on November 17-18, three of those will get an international ranking all on the same weekend at the same time. It'll be their first time that they've played a 13-a-side international, which is pretty amazing. And for Chile, who's the only team who has an established ranking, this will be the first time that their domestic quota earns ranking points for them, and will do so with a couple of games in a couple of days, which is a real big boost for a country like that.
And it's no easy task as well. There are a few challenges there.
Oh, for sure. I mean, definitely. We've just had a big challenge came in 2 days ago, and that was that the Chilean general election is going to be on the 19th of November, which is what we'd planned to have the final on that day being the Sunday. So the rule in Chile is actually that you can't have any sort of sporting event or congregate in a group on an election day. And in fact, on the Saturday, where we've had to now move the final by bringing all the days forward by one day, we've been told basically that we can't have more than 1,000 people in one place a day before an election. So
We're not quite sure what to expect crowd-wise over there, but there's a chance we'll actually have to turn people away at the gate so we can still stage the games there, which, you know, is a curveball we didn't see coming from anywhere, and it's not something that would be an issue if it were held here in Australia. So some of these matters are all about learning the local culture and what flies over in different parts of the world. And obviously, you know, Mexico, Colombia, Argentina, Chile, all very diverse countries, very, you know, far apart. Mexico down to the south of Chile is, you know, it's quite a distance. It's probably like, say, from Europe down to South Africa. You know, there's significant distances to be travelled. There's time that these guys have to get off from work. And a lot of them come from, you know, subsistence or lowly paid situations at home. So for them to take time away from their families and go down to do this is a big undertaking. So, you know, we've committed to help all the visiting teams with their flights. And basically, you know, the whole thing will probably cost about $30,000. And Latin Heat intends on putting at least $20,000 towards that. We've already put over $10,000, and now we're raising the remainder through crowdfunding. And obviously some of the players over there and their local sponsors will chip in to bring us to the full amount. But it'd be great if people are, we're on chuffed.org and we've got a crowdfunding page going there. So if people want to help Three Nations get their world ranking for the first time and for us to have our first ever championship in Latin America, it'd be great if you could hop on there and give us a bit of support.
Well, you've literally been doing the legwork for this as well, haven't you? Because we've seen you on Facebook and you set yourself a challenge the other week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, mate, I think I was just running out of options there to get people motivated and interested in what we're doing. So, yeah, I just said for every dollar that people donate, I'd do 100 kilo deadlift, which is pretty interesting because I played my last game for the season last week and my back and hamstrings were absolutely killing me as a result.
Yeah, I think you undersold yourself a bit there. When I was looking at the exchange rate from pounds to Australian dollars and the amount that you could potentially do that week, it seemed a little bit insane on your side.
Possibly people would say insanity is what led me to this place in the first place. So.
Well, that's great. I mean, it one thing I think people will realise when it comes to Latin American Rugby League is there's a great colour, there's a great personality about the game over there. Each, like you say, each of the countries has got its own unique culture and its own different set of people. It's a very interesting part of the world to watch Rugby League grow in.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Chile really has to be commended out of this, and Guillermo Arteaga and Ronaldo, who sort of drive the game forward there, you know, we've probably been a bit tough with them and help, you know, seeking their assistance and helping them to put together such a significant tournament when they're only really in their first season of staging a domestic competition as well. But we did think that they really deserve to be the hosts with all the advances they've made. And I've gathered a new sense of respect for those guys and how hard they're prepared to work and what they put in. You know, just to give people who don't know the background to Chile a bit of knowledge, Guillermo actually built a makeshift factory in his front room, kicked everything out of his front room so he could make rugby league balls because he couldn't get his hands on any. So he's not only running the competition and financing and organising it, but he's making the footballs, which is pretty amazing. And he lost his job recently, and he had to get replacement employment in Antofagasta, which is about 2,000 kilometres from where he lives. So he's been organising rugby league, flying out and then flying back home. And while he was over in Antofagasta starting his new job, he's actually started up a new rugby league organisation there. So the guy's relentless, really, and it's given me huge sense of respect for him.
I find it hugely inspirational. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the local club that I'm involved with, but certainly when you, you're doing endeavours yourself, and I know you're involved with clubs in your own area, you often hear, even at the professional level, people talk about not having enough resources and struggling to get things done. And then you go and see the stuff these guys do, and you think, well, no, this is not really an excuse for not doing anything.
Yeah, and I guess you see some of the money-hungry things that do happen at the top level in NRL, which, you know, there might be similar cases in Super League, but I suppose not to the same extent because of, you know, the different salaries blokes could command over here. And then you have, you know, people that I run into at grassroots level each week that if they could just have enough money to cover their expenses and some meagre expenses at that, would probably contribute a lot more in the bigger sense of the game. You know, I've got a lady who mails out all of our purchases from our online store for Latin Heat, and she refuses to take any money for the postage she spends. So I think little sacrifices like that where someone's, you know, probably giving away $20 to $30 a week out of their own money and then the time that goes with it, they're the people that the game's really built upon. And from a young age, I used to have, you know, posters of players on my wall, but I've said probably for close to 20 years now that my heroes are really the people out there that will keep a competition going on the smell of an oily rag for, you know, seasons and seasons upon end. Those people are the real heroes of rugby league.
Yes, I mean, if you take somewhere like Mexico, I don't know about the other countries, but even somewhere like Mexico, the simple things like trying to find a surface to practice on, it's a very difficult task.
This is it's a big problem across Latin America, and you know, there's so many things here that you don't realise as an outsider looking in. When I went to Brazil, people, you know, just to get even a rugby union ball, let alone a rugby league ball, is incredibly hard. If you do get a hold of, you know, an oblong-shaped ball, it's most likely going to be an NFL ball, and people won't know how to pass it. They'll throw it overhead like a baseball pitch. That's the level that you're dealing with as your basis. And, of course, it's stern opposition to rugby league in many of these countries from rugby union, and we've already seen incidences in especially Mexico, also a little bit in Argentina, of players being told they'll be banned for numerous years if they try. So actually getting a field to play on that has rugby, you know, some sort of rugby posts is difficult. And Argentina uses soccer fields and then erects, you know, extension poles on top of the soccer posts to play their games. And that's, you know, that's the level that you're dealing with. So we've just benefited in Chile from a police officer who's donated a big block of land to form the first dedicated rugby league field in South America, which is a huge, you know, huge step forward for the game, and I hope he's recognised in due course.
Yeah, I mean, you spoke about Chile. I mean, you almost feel like these people should be kind of motivational speakers for the game. I mean, they've just started, or they're just about to start their first domestic competition over there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think they're running with six teams for this first year, even though my knowledge is there's up to 13 senior clubs, but they felt those six were the best position to compete against each other. And especially in the southern area where they're mainly concentrated around Los Angeles, and that's Los Angeles, Chile, for anyone that might get slightly confused. Around that area, the towns are only sort of, you know, between 10 and 50 minutes apart in a sort of circle. So they've got a nice geographical area to concentrate on that doesn't demand a lot of people in terms of playing distance or time.
And I guess that's the first start point, isn't it, really? I mean, like you've said, resources are few and far between, so you can't be too ambitious in your early years.
Yeah. Over in Argentina, they hit a bit of a roadblock 2 years ago because they're mainly based about 4 to 5 hours south of where Buenos Aires is, and they found it limiting. They could only get to a few seaside towns in that area and then, you know, no one else to play against as opposition. So Chile's got that benefit of being in a tightly packed area. You know, Mexico also has the same, but then between there's two competitions that run over there and they're about 5 hours apart. So if they want to have games that are, you know, outside their local league, they have to travel quite a bit as well, which is something as Australian country clubs will appreciate, but I'm not sure, you know, elsewhere in the world people would travel such distances unless it was, say that like the USARL final that's coming up, which will be a clash between the North and the South.
Yes, and often these distances, the way they're travelled is they're quite challenging themselves because they're not always on the best roads and it's an overnight bus and literally people are jumping from finishing one work shift and going straight back into work on the next shift after they finish the game. It's quite extraordinary what these people are prepared to do.
Yeah, last year when Chile travelled over to Miramar in Argentina, they had 20 hours on the bus each way, so 40 hours altogether. And when they got to the Chilean border, it was closed. The border security were having some sort of strike, so they just sat there in the middle of a 20-hour bus trip and wait for, I think it was 8 or 9 extra hours on top. So these are the kind of interesting challenges you face in different parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, as I say, it's very exciting stuff, and we all need to, I suppose, make sure we get onto chuff.org or the Latin Heat Rugby League Facebook page or check out leagueculture.com and give these guys a lift, really, if we can.
Yeah, and, you know, personally, I'd like to thank you, Stuart, for, you know, you chipped in out of your own pocket, which is fantastic, and the way that you run this podcast puts a lot of the spotlight on teams that need it and things that are going on around the world.
Well, I always say, really, I mean, I think, and I'm sure Australia's no different, it's quite an expensive world we live in now, and to be honest, the amount of money that we donate, we probably wouldn't notice that much in our shopping bill, to be honest. At $5 or $10 here or there, it's on a day-to-day basis, it's really nothing to us, but to these people it can make a difference, can't it, to them becoming involved in the game.
Definitely, you know, the average wage in a lot of these countries is about $5,000 a year, you know, which is something, but it's not fantastic. And I know, you know, personally, my brother-in-law, so my wife's family's from Brazil, but he works on a cassava farm, you know, digging up root plants all day, and works in a bakery as his second job. So he'll wake up, make all the bread at, say, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, work until, say, 6 or 7 a.m., then he goes and works on the farm all day, then gets to 8 o'clock and goes and works back in the bakery again until about 10. And then, you know, quite often for that, he can see the equivalent of, you know, about $60 a week, and out of that he's got to pay for his kids and his rent and all that sort of thing. So, you know, I can really relate to how these people find it tough to afford boots or to afford their own travel. You know, it's part of the big challenge of growing the sport over there, but I genuinely believe there's huge potential that we haven't tapped into.
No, I think it's, I mean, I briefly played with the idea of spreading rugby league when I was in Africa. I think it was last year. I spent some time in Nigeria, and you can see what a struggle it is to get anything started in terms of sport in these places. But just the sheer reaction you get from people from doing anything, really, because people just love that anything new that comes along, anything that's not soccer, anything that's different. It's there's enormous challenges to do these things, but you sort of see how things could explode if they would explode, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I think if we find a way to do it that's economical, the potential is fantastic, because what rugby union has done over there is really align itself with the extreme sort of high class. And for all the working class people that we tend to deal a lot with, they don't really relate to that, and they don't have the disposable income that these people do. So that's why they haven't tried a rugby coat before, because they felt like they didn't belong there, and they felt like they couldn't afford to, you know, take up the game. But if we start taking care of their boots and a little bit of their travel, then it just comes down to their effort, and you can see how much they love the game when they give it a go. People form different opinions of rugby union in Australia and in England of being, you know, belonging to private schools, etc. But over in South America, it is a very extreme form of that. And, you know, there's still instances of people in positions of privilege paying so that certain people will make their way into rep teams in that sport. So people are starting to look at rugby league as an equitable environment where people are all going to be treated the same, and we're not really elitist about who we want to come down and play with us.
No, and I think that was the original values that we held dear in the sport. I mean, a lot of people back in the sort of the 1970s, there was a magazine called Open Rugby, and one of the concepts, if you like, one of the watchwords in Open Rugby was the fact that the sport was not just open in terms of play, but open in terms of how anyone could play the sport. You know, it went against things like racial prejudice and apartheid and things like that. And that's the sort of thing I want us really to get back to in the sport.
Yeah, 100%. But just being my mindset from the way I was raised, that's how I believe, you know, everything should be. So I hope we can get to that situation. In saying that, we don't kind of go around to these countries and say, look, we're going to be the opposition to rugby union. We recognise that the population in Latin America is huge, and basically we're saying to people, this is another avenue through which you can represent your country. And perhaps, you know, if you're a guy that's got some anger that you need to deal with, or you want to test yourself physically, we're simply another angle you can maybe better your life or better your mindset through. We're not trying to steal players from rugby union. We think there's plenty to go around over there that haven't been tapped into.
Now, this is really, it's the first kind of major international tournament of its kind, well, really outside the World Cup, that has been for a while, I suppose. How important is having an international focus point to develop rugby league in these nations?
I know a lot of people have a debate about this top-down development versus, you know, bottom-up development when it comes to establishing new nations. I'm firmly in the corner that I believe top-down does work. And for any country where there's, say, less than 20% of kids don't play rugby league at school or have a firm knowledge of it through TV, I think you need to have a national incentive to make it in their interest and a chance to go somewhere or to play against different teams and say, oh, look, I got to represent Colombia, I got to represent Mexico. So for us, having this tournament is as much about encouraging the domestic leagues and getting more people looking up there and finding huge numbers of people who aspire to represent their country, so therefore we can create larger domestic leagues. For us, it's that part first, is trying to boost those numbers at the ground level. But also, if we can, at the same time that the Rugby League World Cup's going on, if we can say, look, we're growing in this part of the world, and these countries have, you know, they're verifiably getting together 20 players who are going to compete in this tournament, then they're at a stage where we should be considering them in the, you know, our strategy forward for the next 4 years, and those countries deserve to have a place in qualifiers and deserve to be considered if we're going to, you know, spread the budgetary allocations around after the World Cup. So one thing we're looking at doing too is having little clubhouses where we visit during our period in South America to watch Rugby League World Cup. So we'll hook it up onto a big screen and get everyone down there and enjoying the game. So although there is a tournament happening over 2 days, there's actually 2 to 3 weeks of development work around this where we're going to be visiting small towns or visiting schools and trying to start the game up and then taking people back and getting them to watch Rugby League World Cup games live from the other side of the world. So, it's kind of a big event within a big event.
Yeah, and one of the things I think you've spoke about in the past is a new market. It's a new market out there. It's a new place to sell NRL to if we can get people in these countries interested. I mean, both in the UK and both in Australia, both bodies seem to be leaking cash at the moment in various ways. And any new market's got to be a good thing for the sport.
That's it. I mean, obviously, we've discussed there are economical issues in this country, so it's not a huge gold mine in terms of per person income. But if you look at the overall size of those economies, purely for scale of numbers, you know, there's 600 million people living in Latin America. Add another 100 million Latin Americans who live elsewhere now. So, you know, so there's about 54 million, I think, live in the USA alone. So if we can influence that population, there's, you know, significant, you know, pure mass numbers that will follow the sport. But there's also, you know, the company connections through there that will also be influenced. I believe that the Brazilian economy is now the third or fourth biggest in the world. So people might be thinking of Latin America as small fry, but there's actually some substantial gains that could be had out of there.
Well, even in the poorest countries in the world, there are always very rich individuals and very rich companies. So any new market is always a business opportunity.
That's it, yeah. You never know until you try, in all senses of that sort of phrase.
And where do we see Latin Heat going to next? What's on the board for Latin Heat? What's coming up?
Okay, so I mean, this is our big one. Obviously, the Latin American Championships are 17th to 18th of November. But before that, we've got a series of games being played in Liverpool and Western Sydney with our Australian diaspora. And that will have games. So Chile is going to be playing Thailand. And they're, at the moment, they're the South American and the Southeast Asian teams with the biggest domestic comps. So I believe Thailand's got 8 clubs over in their competition. So that's a nice matchup between those two sides. And on the same day, we'll have Uruguay will be playing El Salvador. And they're both, at the moment, they're both in the bottom 5 ranked international federation nations. But we know, you know, having that Latino rivalry and being of a similar standing, they're both looking forward to this as a chance to rack up a rare win and progress where they want to be. We actually have organised this whole event thinking the games that are going to be on will be pretty tight affairs, as you can't really pick the outcome from the simply reading the teams on paper. Prior to that, we'll also have the ASEAN team, which is a combined Southeast Asian nations against our Latin Heat development team. So that'll be all the players who aren't already representing that day against for either Chile, Uruguay or El Salvador. We'll pull on the Latin Heat colours and play ASEAN. Post that, out of those day's events, we're going to pick a Latin Heat elite squad, which will face Africa United at Cabramatta on October 14. And that will be before the Malta, I think it's Malta Philippines is playing that day. I'm just racking my brain. Sorry, I've had so much going on. I'm trying to remember what the main game is, but it has been organised by Malta and will be the main curtain raiser to that.
I don't think Malta's played in a while as well, have they? So that's going to be interesting.
Well, I think they had a really good win earlier in the year against the Philippines. So they're kind of in renewed spirits to go forward and take on a few different countries. So, yeah, I know David from Maltese Rugby League has been fairly active lately, and he's always someone who likes to take the game forward. So I look forward to the whole day.
It'll certainly be interesting to follow, and it'll certainly be, sounds like a great competition to be had.
Yeah, and the more we can have of these, you know, so-called minnow nations playing each other before the Rugby League World Cup, it starts to build that appetite as well, and a bit of evidence of how far the game spread.
Yeah, I was going to say on a final comment, really, do you feel you're kind of changing the mindset, the culture by doing this? Do you think it helps people take a more international view on the game?
Yeah, and I think it makes people feel as though they're not left out either. All these different communities that are playing in the development games in the months preceding the World Cup, if we came to November and we kicked off the Rugby League World Cup proper and they weren't somehow involved, they might be feeling as though, oh, this isn't a sport for me or my brothers or my cousins. And we're sort of, you know, dismissing that from the outset by showing how many different communities are out there that have formed rugby league sides. So it's an all-inclusive atmosphere that I think's been created around the game that wasn't there before.
That's good. That's interesting. I've never thought of it like that as a way of bringing people into the sport from the commercial side. But that does make sense for tournaments like the World Cup that are taking place.
Definitely.
Right, Robert Bergen, thank you very much for your time, and good luck with your squats and the competition in November.
Excellent, mate. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, thanks. Fantastic, as always, to hear from Robert. And we're going to end the show on our final interview, well, of all time, with Gurul Yildiz. We're now talking to Gurul Yildiz, who is going to talk us through all the latest developments in Turkish Rugby League, which there have been many.
Yeah, how's it going? Hello.
It's good. It's good. You've recently been awarded observer status.
Yes, correct. Been a lot of hard work on that because actually in a short period of time we did a lot of things in Turkey. We basically just started our league in late 2016 with the boys of five teams in Turkey, had a championship, 11 games, and Kadıköy became the champs against Eskişehir in the grand final. And we put a lot of work in, filled all the ticked all the boxes concerning the rugby league Europe qualify as a observer status. With a huge amount of help from Julian and the board members, Ali Can, president, John, our financial guy. So we did a lot of huge work in a short period of time. Yeah, it was great.
Julian seems quite a character. We saw recently he did, he starred in a video that you'd had done with the Bulls for Vimo, which was quite good.
Yeah, we did an interview with a sports TV, and I was holding the Stadium Ball. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, actually, it was the little sort of mini movie that he made about the. About the Bulls' journey into the Balkan Super League.
Oh yes. That was one of our players. He studies photography at a university and did the journey of Kadıköy Bulls. That was actually prior to my involvement in rugby league Turkey, because I only just got involved in rugby league in Turkey since December of 2016. So this was pre-made or actually been in the process prior to my knowledge. So, yeah, when I saw that, it was fantastic.
For an organisation with what I guess is limited resources, it was quite impressive.
It was. As one of the students of Kadıköy Bulls did that. It was a great little documentary of the Kadıköy Bulls team, how they processed, how they trained, for the Balkan Super Cup and the league, and with minimum resources, yeah.
So you spoke about yourself now becoming part of the Turkish Rugby League. What brought you into the sport?
Okay, my background is I lived in Australia for 27 years, and so basically I've been working out of Europe based in Turkey, and one of my cousins sent a message over saying that, hey, Rugby League Turkey has just started, just, you know, heads up, get involved in it. And I was basically head over heels. I just got in contact with Julia and said, I want to be involved, I want to help out. So I went to a game, and then one of the teams was needing a coach or a mentor. Because I used to play rugby league in Australia for Canterbury Bankstown and also Enfield Fields. So really, that's the start of my journey. And so I started coaching Bilgi University in Turkey And it was a pretty successful season for Billy Gill. So we finished third in the league. But just young kids, 18, 19 year old. It's some of half of the team, it's the first year of playing rugby league because their background is union. And so, yeah, it was great.
With your playing background, I can imagine that the guys in Turkey were a bit shocked, really, when you told them that you played at that level.
Well, yeah, I'm actually, to be honest, I'll be one of the only person really full bred and grown up with rugby league in Turkey because majority of the people were all involved in rugby union or just basically with a background of wrestling. They're now playing league or union. So, yeah, a couple of the guys really understanding who's Canterbury Bankstown is, who's all these NRL teams throughout Australia, and they're all excited because the knowledge I have or the experience I have, they're basically it's feeding off on the team now, which is great. And I'm helping up with the Kaliko guys for the Balkan Super Cup. Yeah, it's worked out really well.
Do you find yourself that you're in a unique position? Because obviously, your own identity obviously spans two cultures, if you like, and it can be difficult to bring people into rugby league if they're not familiar with rugby league and vice versa. Do you find that's a big benefit?
Yeah, it's an open market in Turkey because the Turks do love physical contact and they do love soccer or the round ball. And it's an open market. And these guys, you know, when I show the a game on a TV screen or on my iPhone, they just get amazed and they all want to get involved. But on the other side, it's also difficult because we don't have any resources. We don't have the fields. We don't have the balls. We don't have the gear. And so it's like it's basically, we're pioneers in a country where you're overwhelmed with soccer.
The challenge of starting a league has not been a small one because you've had to register all your teams at once.
Yeah, what I understood was how we started the league in 2016 was we did a beach tournament, first international beach rugby league tournament, and we invited a lot of our teams. So we have 15 teams come, and through there, the excitement of league and the of rugby league comparing it to union. They saw the difference there, and the teams were excited to come and join our league, and that's how we started. But for us to find a team, we had to basically mix and juggle between union games and league games, and people don't understand that at the moment. So it's difficult at the moment trying to find a team, players. And it's developing slowly, but
you've obviously done very well, though. Despite all the challenges in front of you, you've managed to bring four or five teams into the league, which you initially had to have to start the league.
That's right. We weren't really sure what's going to happen. As I said, the beach International Rugby League beach tournament basically was a stepping stone for our league to start. Thus, we had to show the difference between rugby union and rugby league, and also there was a few negative things happening with union in Turkey, where there was an opening that we took the opportunity and we started our league.
I mean, that's obviously something you've got to be very careful of, because setting up a new sport in any country, you've got obviously have good relationships with the authorities. And obviously, I guess this is where people like yourself come in, who understand the local conditions. That you there are certain things that you have to do right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you got to basically be careful because of the nobody knows rugby league here in Turkey, especially people in authorities. And so, like, we don't have our ground. Every time we want to play a game or even have a training, we have to have a permission through the local council, local government, to get approved. Then we can go and train and go and play a game. So we need to explain our situation every time we do this, because management always change. So that's, yeah, it's difficult at times to get the things that are happening here in Turkey, because everything's new.
You've done very well at setting up. How are you finding the Balkan Super League?
I am actually very excited. You know, unfortunately, we got walloped our first game. We're against Drakol. It was a 60-zip scoreline. But the thing was, it was a huge learning curve for us. Because of Kadıköy is a very strong team in Turkey. They have been the champs for many years in the Union's league. And as they converted into rugby league, as they became the champs of the Turkish league, when we played the first game of the Super League, Balkan Super League against Drakol, we basically learned that there is a style, there is a system here that we need to learn. It was a real wake-up call. And with that result, I basically stepped in more to teach these guys how to play rugby league a little bit, teaching the techniques, teaching the tackling, teaching the passing, teaching the setups, patterns, and so on. So against our second game, against Lokomotiv Sofia, the Bulgarian team, it was a total different story. It was an excellent transaction between way of thinking of what they're used to. Now they start thinking rugby league. We do a lot of TV video sessions, and you know, it showed on the score. You know, we scored 50 points over 50 points. We kept the Lokomotiv team at 10 points. So 54-10, I think it was the scoreline. So. And we're all excited for the our third game against Red Star, Belgrade, upcoming month, I believe, 23rd of September. So the concept of the Balkan Super Cup, I think, is a fantastic concept, to be honest.
The fact that the Bulls are champions in rugby union, is that a big help?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because they're the champions, and there were previous years there were champions of in the union. The quality of the players the Kadıköy Bulls have right now are one of the top players in Turkey. And so, but the whole team has now transformed themselves into rugby league players, also, which is fantastic. They adapted really well, and I'm really proud of the boys.
Because I guess they have that drive and that winning mentality.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they don't want to lose at all. even a little touch game they play with each other, they basically, you know, they give the hammer and tongs. They get stuck into each other. We just, as you know, you may have heard of it, we did our beach tournament, beach rugby league tournament, our second one. Again, the Kadıköy Bulls were the champs. They were champs of last year, but they were champs of this year also. And the game was only 1-0, one try to. And it was a real tight game, and the Kadıköy Bulls turned up again. So you're right. The team is very, very strong. Well, strong-minded.
And they're also, they're not an unknown team, are they? Because I mean, they appear on things like TV adverts in Turkey.
Yes. The Turkish Airlines has sponsored the Union, European Union League, Champions League. So the Turkish Airlines did a little commercial, an ad, and so the team, the players in that ad were based from the Kadıköy Bulls team.
And you've done very well with TV exposure. Your beach tournament managed to make it on quite a few different TV channels.
Yeah, that was huge. That was very pleasantly surprising the interest level because you may have seen it too yourself. There was we had six girl teams. One of the girl teams were from Lebanon, so the Lebanese girls were fantastic. They actually won the championship, and so we had our national TV called Canal D. Canal D. They did a 3-minute prime time interview. They showed on prime time TV, which on news, which was fantastic. And the other TV channel was a pay TV sports. It's called Sports TV Ladies Life of Ladies. So it's more of a ladies program, but it's a mixture. And so that was like we went on studio, and also that did a coverage of the whole game. 40 minutes actually was on air for 40 minutes, which is fantastic. Great exposure for rugby league itself.
And the position of Turkey as a nation must present lots of opportunities to spread the game into other countries.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We are actually at a focal point. You know, we want to actually build the rugby league here in Turkey so much that it's gonna couple it with the Romanians, most probably the Bulgarians. We've got a very good relationship with the Bulgarians. They we've got a common border, so the Bulgarians and I. The Turks will develop, the Lebanese and the Turks will develop each other most probably, because we've got a good relationship there too. And well, the Ukrainians and the Russians also, a lot of interest between those two countries in Turkey. So it's going to be like as Turkish Rugby League grows, it's going to help grow majority of Europe also, the Balkan countries also.
It probably, I would think, would aid the Middle East, because the Middle East has kind of had little bits of rugby league, but it's struggled from being a little bit disconnected.
It is. It's going to connect Middle East to Europe via Turkey. Yes, definitely.
Well, it's all very exciting stuff. Is there any other announcements that we can expect, or is it just business as usual at the moment?
Any announcements, as you said? Yeah, it's business as usual. We're totally concentrating on completing our Super Cup, Balkan Super Cup. And then obviously we're going to attend the Balkan Nations Cup, which is going to be held on the 6th, 7th, 8th of October. Straight after that, the same period of time, we're going to launch our second season. So hopefully we're going to have more teams joining. And whatever is necessary to develop a rugby league in Turkey, we are basically rolling our sleeves up, and we're going to do it, most probably.
Considering this is your first season, that's quite an impressive list of events.
It is. The season was very successful. We did the Balkan Cup games, and we also did the Beach Rugby League tournament, the second Beach International Rugby League tournament. What was a fantastic success. That went from 15 teams to 22 teams, and a lot of exposure, a lot of sponsorship, a lot of excitement with locally. And this is all in such a short little period of time. And now we're going to work on universities as we need to now build up a player base, and then obviously a club, clubs. That's basically we need to go down the grassroots of rugby league, which basically introduce players through higher school, universities. Hopefully we can go down to at least 15, 12-year-old kids playing rugby league in Turkey within a couple of years.
Is it a realistic option to get it into the high schools? I mean, I can imagine that's quite a difficult thing to do.
Oh, yes, it is. But we already got the ball rolling. We've been talking to a couple of professors at universities, and I've been talking to them and said we need to develop the rugby league. And they're all basically excited. They invited us. Hopefully, coming up a few months, we'll go to some seminars and do presentation games or show trial games at the university, and possibly we might do a nice tournament. That'd be nice also.
Oh, it'd be amazing. I mean, I know in Lebanon that they're very keen on the university thing. So immediately you see possibilities springing up already there.
Oh, yeah. Between university games, basically. I believe as the president from Lebanon, the Lebanese Rugby Federation, Raymond, I believe he and with us might be building a nice little relationship up. And so we might get some games going between clubs or university games between each other. That'd be fantastic.
And the good thing with universities is it's a good way to get people who go on to do important jobs involved in the game.
Absolutely. When they got that, as they know rugby league, and they as they grow, as they move on in life, and they're as they get into, let's say, government positions as a job, and if they got background of rugby union, rugby league, that's obviously it's going to help our courses a lot. So definitely when we get people involved in rugby league and throughout the universities, it's going to help us a lot.
Okay, so this is the end of the last show for League Culture. There'll be no more. And I'd like to say it was an absolute pleasure getting the chance to work with Des Foy and Declan Foy on the show over the years. And I really enjoyed things that we got to do, like putting on rugby league festivals and trying to get involved with projects to help grow the numbers in the game and travelling abroad and even going down to Parliament and getting a chance to argue the case for rugby league with the BBC. It was all good experiences. However, what I will say, the reason I'm not doing this anymore is the whole point of this show was that it was going to be a positive show. And when there are more negatives than positives when you're doing something, that's the time to call it a day. And in the past, rugby league was always under threat from rugby union. Now, I don't think that's the case anymore. I think the biggest problem the game faces at the moment, the biggest danger to rugby league, is not rugby union, it's rugby league itself. And if we don't stop all the internal conflict and create some kind of vision going forward for the game, and stop making decisions based on the self-interests of administrators, we won't have a game.